We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Are you crying?
No.
Are you crying? Are you crying? There's no crying. There's no crying in baseball.
You think football is still fun?
Yes.
Sir?
Yes, no.
No?
Sir, it was fun.
Not anymore, though, is it? Is it?
No, not right now.
No, it's not fun anymore, not even a little bit.
Just look at that, he hit the fall. That gets a free steak. You having fun yet?
Oh, yeah, I'm having a blast. Thanks.
Good.
All right, welcome back to Big Screen Sports, the podcast where all movies are sports movies. I am your host, Kyle Banduho, and today we have a sports movie from a unique subset of culture, something that we have not done before. We are talking about the evangelical football movie Facing the Giants with two great co-hosts. First, a returner, my good friend and co-host, Alex McDaniel, and then someone whose work I have admired for a very long time, the co-host of the Shutdown Fullcast and the new novel Hell is a World Without You, Jason Kirk, a guy who I've been listening to for years. Thrilled to have him come visit us on Big Screen Sports and talk this movie. If you haven't, go check out Jason's book. He's going to give you the pitch in the intro to this episode. The link to buy the book is going to be in the show notes, but obviously pertains a lot to what we're going to be talking about with this movie, which was a first time watch for me. I did not grow up in an evangelical culture. This was a very interesting experience, a worthwhile experience. Great episode. Hope y'all enjoy it. Before we get into that, I do want to shout out our Big Screen Sports Patreon group, especially our producer level patrons. That is Aaron Figueroa, Mike Schubert, Steve Rogers, Kevin Frost, Mike D, Ryan Yeager, Mike Dries, Chris Mikoski, John Craig, Sam Smith, Zach Rich, Class Stain Fire, Jason Alva, Stephen DeBoe, Dan McFall, Kevin Inkelman, Mac Lindsay, Kurt Ritchie, Robert Dove, Andrew Teagle, Benjamin Bauman, Jeff Esseth, Anthony Scafone, and Taylor Logan. Big thanks to them and all of our patrons for supporting this show. If you want to support this show, if you want to have a say in what this show covers, if you want to participate in our Big Screen Sports live watches, you can go to patreon.com/bigscreensports. We do have a live watch of Clue coming next week for patrons. It's going to be in our Discord channel, so check that out. And with that, I hope everyone enjoys this episode. If you haven't checked out this movie, it is it's free on Freevee. Free with ads. You can also rent it for $4 on Amazon. I chose the ads. But with that, let's talk Facing the Giants with me, Alex McDaniel, and Jason Kirk. All right. Joining me tonight on Big Screen Sports, we have a first time in a long time. First, you know her as the host of the legendary 10 Things I Hate About You podcast from 2 weeks ago and our many Ted Lasso episodes, Alex McDaniel. Alex, welcome back. It's been the first time in a while for us, I think.
I think so. Are you jealous that the 10 Things one just did bonkers numbers?
Everyone loved it. I heard a lot of good things. Like people love that. They might just be tired of me.
That's what it is.
And I've told people that you and Caroline can take over rom-com month. You guys are taking over the schedule. You can take over the feed. I'm fine with that.
I like how you act like that's a sacrifice as opposed to probably what you would like. That's
That'd be great with me. And then joining the show, someone whose work I have admired from afar for a long time. He's the co-host of the Shutdown Fullcast and author of the new novel, Hell is a World Without You, Jason Kirk. Jason, welcome to Big Screen Sports.
Hey, thanks for having me. Excited to be here. We just so happened to very coincidentally have a film to discuss tonight that is in line with that book you just mentioned. I don't know how that coincidentally happened, but it seems very fortuitous.
What are the chances? I'm out here trying to collect the full cast people like Infinity Stones. we're three deep now, but Jason, before we dive in, tell the folks about your new novel.
So it's a ex-evangelical coming-of-age novel set in the 2000s. It is for anyone who grew up in that world or anyone who didn't grow up in that world, anyone who is from the 2000s or from a different decade. I promise it's funny. I guarantee it's funny. You're giving me your laughs. I'm not even worried about that. But we're going to try to go beyond that. We're going to try to go for big feelings as well. It's been widely praised and reviewed. Just got a recommendation from Kirkus Reviews today. That's a pretty big one. And all sales proceeds before February 12th are going to the Trevor Project. We have already donated $39,000, and that number will go up. But yeah, it's a very, very exciting project. And Facing the Giants is referenced on page 4. So
perfect. And if people listen to you on this show and are, you know, like you come from that world, you all tell the folks about the Vacation Bible School podcast.
Yeah, that's my other podcast I host with my wife Emily. We are she was raised slightly different evangelical than me, more mainline than evangelical, I would say. And both of us are going back through the Bible and like learning things about it, which is not how it happened in church at the time. We just sort of learned what some guy's idea of what's in the Bible is in there. And, you know, and people who didn't grow up like us, their idea of what is in that book is just sort of inflected by pop culture. Everybody kind of thinks they know what's in there, but every single episode we've done, we found about a million things where it's like, okay, so the popular conception that you get either in church or in pop culture is just wrong in every way. So it's fun to learn stuff, and that's what we do on there. Total opposite of the Shutdown Fullcast, where we attempt to learn nothing.
Well, I assume that in that podcast, you guys have discovered that, like in this movie, that God cares about football, high school
mm-hmm.
football.
Mm, yes, it's his favorite.
Because, folks, and I want to say links to Jason's book will be in the show notes, so go check that out. But tonight, we are talking about Facing the Giants, the 2006 evangelical football drama, a first-time watch for me. A losing coach and his underdog football team face their giants of fear and failure on and off the field with surprising results. Directed by Alex Kendrick, stars Kendrick, Shannon Fields, and just a bunch of people that you've never heard of. Got a 16% on Rotten Tomatoes, but an 85% audience score. Grossed $10 million on a $100,000 budget because, like, God came through on a parlay with that one. And I was telling you guys before we started recording, I am familiar with the evangelical movie world, mostly through like clips and osmosis from going to high school with a lot of people who are very into movies like this and Fireproof and God's Not Dead and things like that. I have never actually sat through one of these start to finish. It's very eye-opening, very interesting.
You're welcome.
We'll get into it. It wasn't like a total... I wouldn't say a total non-starter. I'll never watch this movie again. But like, it surprised me, and it surprised me in some positive ways. Jason, I want to kick to you of like, what is the evangelical film industry? Like, is this the representation of this industry? Like, what is the kind of the, you know, the outline for the typical evangelical film that debuted between like 2000 and present day?
This is like. In sports world, I would say this is the archetypical example. There are other evangelical sports movies, but this is the one that jumps out for me as like the definitive one. This came out around the same-ish time as God's Not Dead, which I would say is the movie of that world. It came out shortly after the first attempt to make a Left Behind movie. Kirk Cameron, Nicolas Cage took a crack at it. They keep trying to remake those, but it's this whole alternate world where in evangelicals, they make stuff, music, movies, books, video games, anything you can imagine. And all of it is essentially missionary work, even literally evangelical. It's designed to spread their particular version of the religion. And it's all intended to sort of go viral in a way where it's like all of it has like calls to action, right? Like, this is going to make you feel a certain thing about our religion, and you're going to want to join us, you're going to want to come to church, and then you're going to want to tell someone else. Like God's Not Dead literally ends with a call to tell someone about God's Not Dead. Left Behind ends with Kirk Cameron saying, be sure you buy another ticket to this movie in theaters so that the seculars will have to keep making movies about us. So, you know, and this film industry, which is like completely invisible to the average normal person, is it's been going strong for decades. It started in the early 70s with like Rapture movies in the early 70s. And the sports ones, this is, I think, one of the few examples of a sports movie where it's like, it's a functional sports movie, right? Like there are evangelical sports movies where it's like, you didn't even try to do the sports stuff, right? But this handles the basics of what you want in a sports movie. Whether it does them well or not is beside the point, but we'll get to those points. But yeah, the evangelical market is a whole alternate reality, completely invisible to most people. Makes an insane amount of money, and is like fiercely beloved. Like you are supposed to like this movie. Like if you're from like a church that that supported this movie, you feel a deep spiritual obligation to like this movie and to tell people that's the movie, which we saw, which you just mentioned in like the critics versus audience score, right?
So that was one of my big takeaways. And Alex, I'd love your thoughts on this too. Of like, I see people who post about these movies, Fireproof and War Room and God's Not Dead and things like that. And people are like, oh, it's so impactful and stuff like that. And I see if these are your beliefs and this is how you go about your day to day and your business and this, that you can, you know, this represents a lot of the things you like. But these people are lying to themselves that these are good movies. Like, this is a bad movie. This is poorly acted. This move, no one who made this movie has ever seen football. And that's the part where I'm like, I get that you can say this is a good representation of the culture and community that I like to see, but this isn't good. It's like, I do the same thing with like bad heist movies. Den of Thieves wasn't great, but I was like, this is the culture I love, so I'm gonna appreciate this movie. Are these, Alex, are these people doing the same thing?
Okay, look, my favorite movie is Hot Rod. I don't know if I'm the best person to
answer.
That's a perfect
film.
Movie. That's a but perfect movie.
I will say, and this is just my experience, obviously. Like, I don't speak for everyone, but I would say being part of an evangelical Southern Baptist church for the majority of my teens and the first part of my 20s, you know, I wasn't like born and raised in it. I chose it because I was bored when I was a teenager. They're very good at convincing you that you are just the tiniest, little, most misunderstood community. And that's why you have to, you know, be loud about everything you do. And that's why when you see anything that looks like it understands you, you cling to it. To me, it's a very similar mentality to when BuzzFeed quizzes were a big thing and you would post the results on Twitter. Why people repost. I post Libra memes every day. Look at me, I'm a Libra. This is just like me, guys. Same kind of mentality of, we can overlook the fact that it's not a tremendous movie based on secular standards because that is who we are and that's what we believe in. And look how kind of shiny it looks. And it played in real theaters. And again, you can go out and say, this was a $100,000 budget and it made $10 million. It's just more for God. It's more like spreading the message and it's doing the job it's supposed to do. So that's just my take, though.
So as two people who have taken in a lot of these movies, I don't think saying like Hall of Fame, All-Star Starter, or Bench Warmer sports film, I'm going to take initiative and say this is a bench warmer. This should never be watched if you're into a sports movie. Where is this as far as quality and like those classifications in evangelical movies? I also found this like not problem as someone who is like extremely liberal, I guess. Like I did not find this as problematic as like some things that I have read about God's Not. There was no problematic liberal character in this movie, which like I appreciated. It was more like, hey, we're about our values. We're not really as concerned with anyone else.
Yeah, it's set in Albany, Georgia, so they couldn't really find anyone to play that role. Yeah. Yeah, like God's Not Dead, it's all about like this, it's a Christian kid who shows up at a liberal college and he's facing off with his atheist professor played by Kevin Sorbo, who's like who's challenging him to like a battle for his soul and whatever. And we, as you know, young evangelical kids, we were taught that like that's what it's like when you go out into the world. They're gonna hate you and persecute you and pick on you. And this, it like you say, it kind of sidesteps that by being in this very insular Christian community, which is, I assume, is supposed to feel like Albany, Georgia, which is where the church that runs the company that funded all these films made by the Kendricks. Like all of it is very Albany, Georgia coded, and so there's no real liberals to yell at. There are a few people of color, and like there's like banter about like here's how, you know, like there's a black coach who's like, black men look better when they go bald, and it's like that's the level of like banter between people of different races, and it's like, okay, this isn't hilarious, but I'm not offended, you know. I don't like it could be a whole lot worse. It usually is. So like in terms of offensiveness, I would say most of these movies find ways to be worse than this one. Mm-hmm. Without question. In terms of quality, I would say this is above average without question. It is absolutely, by that standard, this is an above average.
I mean, the death crawl scene, if you took that out and put that scene in any other like sports movie, I mean, we would watch that on YouTube.
I had that as what worked. I thought those were sick. Like, I thought that was an incredible kind of punishment sports crawl. Like, I'm hat tip to that. That's actually the lead off for the IMDb trivia. But before we get, can you guys walk me through the Kendrick brothers and specifically Alex Kendrick, the star of this movie? Like, what is the 411 on these gentlemen?
So there is a borderline mega church, we could call it, in Southwest Georgia, Southern Baptist Church, where this might sound weird to anyone who's not from this world. One of their like 15 pastors was their associate pastor of media, was his title. I don't think he's there anymore. He was there for a long, long time. I looked, well, their only similar title right now is the associate pastor of sports, who I guess works with the pastor of sports. Yes, they have two pastors of sports at this church now. But Alex Kendrick was the associate pastor of media, and one day he was like, hey, we should make a Christian sports movie. And they the official biography, the official story of it is they just kept praying until the money showed up, and then they had enough money to make the movie. And like almost everyone in this movie is a volunteer, which I want to say shines through. The greatest Southern accents I have ever seen in a film. Like it is a thing that always takes me out of a movie is hearing a terrible Southern accent, right?
Yeah,
this movie, pitch perfect.
Yeah.
Yes,
authenticity. Yes. From start to finish, you're hearing nothing but Albany, Georgia all throughout. You're hearing the fiercest wah I've ever heard in my life. You're seeing unattended glasses of sweet tea that I am certain were someone needed them just to get through the day. Like every single bit of it is like, this is the most Georgia movie I've ever seen in my life. But yeah, the Kendrick, the first one I think was a race car movie, that like it, and I'm sure it was basically the exact same plot as this one, where it's like he didn't believe, but then he believed, and then he won the race or whatever. And then this one, and the budget just kept escalating. So like this was like the midpoint. After this was like Fireproof, and then he brings in Kirk Cameron. He was still doing like writer, producer, director, but he's like, let's replace myself as lead actor. Let's go get Kirk Cameron. Like
that's a good decision.
Yeah,
I mean, it's a really good.
It's a decision.
Not awesome, but it's better, I guess. I don't know. I honestly prefer. It's more interesting to me to see Kendrick direct himself. Like,
yeah,
see a pastor write a movie and then star in it about himself is pretty fascinating. So, like, yeah, he became a 2000s, early 2010s evangelical media star by making these like undeniably insanely successful movies, just pound for pound based on the budgets. There was one week in like the early 2010s where his movie about cops or whatever, of course there's a movie about cops, where it was like number two in the box office that week or something like that. Like it was like actual legit mainstream success. And it all started in Albany, Georgia.
I saw Fireproof on a date in college, by the way.
Oh my God.
Wow.
It must have been a hot date.
I was on a date with a preacher's kid.
Yes.
And of
okay.
course, I dated him for an entire year after that. But
wow. Perfect. I mean, there's some post date conversations. Another podcast. Starters.
I love that because Fireproof is a movie about like marriage, right? Like,
yes. I was being
Kirk
primed.
Marriage.
Really.
Yes.
God.
Well, so it sounds like the Kendricks have raked in the finances. I, you know, He seems pretty sincere. Like, it doesn't seem like he... It seems far away from the gemstones, but I guess you're, you know... It only takes a few exits off the highway to end up like the gemstones. But I'll get into the IMDb trivia. And Alex, you mentioned the death crawl exercise that they came up with themselves. Mm-mm. To their knowledge, no one had ever done it before.
Interesting.
I think that, like, I think if this last week, Caroline, Nicole, and I did Miracle, and I mentioned that all youth sports coaches took the wrong message for Miracle, which was like, if you just run the shit out of your teams, they'll win for you, and like took that exercise. I think, like, if more coaches had seen this, the death crawl would have gotten very, very popular. I think a lot of coaches would love this because that seems really hard.
The whole time I was like, that kid's gonna fall out. You get a lawsuit on your hands.
The scene where, so it's like a lineman, I guess he's supposed to be. We don't really learn a whole lot about the characters, the players as they go. It's just sort of like, this guy's got a bad attitude. Now he's going to do this thing to make him have a good attitude, right? But he's like crawling with a skinny kid on his back or whatever. And it's like, this is like the legendary scene from this movie. Like, this is the one that, if you know anything about this movie, it's probably this scene. And the scene was like played in like business meetings and like, probably endless Bible studies, like, this is how bad we gotta want whatever it is or whatever. And yeah, Kyle, you mentioned, right? Like,
yes,
you mentioned
this guy. That scene got shown in one of our sales rallies. That is all I will say. I don't believe anyone I work with listens to this, but that is all I will say.
Did it inspire you? Did you go all the way across the field, so to speak?
Just sales that up for that month was just so full of the spirit.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Trent Williams could do that with Brock Purdy on his back for at least 300 yards.
Yeah.
Can I just say, it's really odd that like none of the other guys were like cheering him on. They just sat there silently until they just started standing up, but no one cheered. No one was like, you can do it, man.
God bless. Yeah, like there was no either you can do it or don't you look stupid. Or, yeah, you know, like, there was no participation at all.
Really, really interesting setup for that.
Because, you know, teenage boys are known for just, like somber observation, not a lot of yelling.
Yeah, low energy, most teenage boys. don't have a lot going through there. Okay, this one was interesting to me because you had mentioned most of the people were volunteers or whatever. Like, these were not actors, most of them. Bobby Lee Duke was played by Jim McBride, an associate pastor of Sherwood Baptist Church, who was once a professional wrestler. The lollipop was his idea. I can see that. That guy had like that seemed like a wrestling foil. I'm not, Jason, I know you're huge into wrestling. I'm not as well versed, but that was, is that an, was that guy notable?
No, I would assume that's some small local South Georgia circuit or whatever, but it came through though, right? Like,
yeah,
when you watch it, you sort of think like he's kind of a really good villain. Like,
yeah,
it's one of the most effective, like unquestionably, hands down, no equivocation, effective performances in the movie is this rival coach.
I agree.
He's just hamming it up.
I agree. Got some questions about his game management, but we'll get to that.
Well, yeah.
So this one, IMDb, like kind of like Wikipedia, I think anyone can post. This one was interesting because of exactly how it was phrased, and I just wanted to, it just says, any profits received by the church from this movie will be used to build a youth center in Albany, Georgia. It didn't say the profits were used. It's like someone came in and said, hey, the profits for this will be used to build a youth center.
It's one hell of a youth center.
I was about to say $10 million. It's got to be a pretty fancy youth center.
Yeah, I would. I'll go take a look. It's I think this church does about 2,000 in attendance on Sundays, so you're gonna need a pretty sizable youth center.
True.
Yeah, that's, man. This is the last one I pulled, and I noticed this, and I kind of like, I respected how they did football because some of the football practices were real or filmed right afterwards. Sometimes Grant and the others were walking around pretending to be in charge, but they really weren't. It becomes very obvious that they filmed actual football games and actual football practices, especially because the helmets for their team don't match up in those scenes.
And
but
the
like,
shoes.
I kind of respect like the guerrilla filming attitude of like, okay, we're just going to film, we're going to film this high school game and we're going to insert it in our movie and make everything work that way. I have, if we like transition this into what worked about this movie, I've seen football done a lot worse on film. Like, yeah. I've seen movies that look like Necessary Roughness looks horrible. This movie looks way better than that in terms of football.
So wasn't the cinematographer and or editor like a veteran NFL films guy? He's like the one legit football person they got. I could be wrong about that. But I
that
think
is research I didn't do. And if that's the case, that's they didn't ask that man nearly enough.
I just remember it's one of those things that just kind of sits in my brain and then I say it out loud. And I'm like, I don't know if I made that up or not. So maybe cut that part out. But I think there's somebody, there's an NFL films guy who was involved. So
that's very interesting to me, because when we get to like what didn't work, I have a lot of questions about the understanding of football in this movie.
I think the filming of the football, it looked very real. The like storytelling that they're drawing from the football, it felt like you say, it felt very much like they're taking footage and then just like, ah, we got to tell a story with this raw material. Like, it very clearly was not shaped for the story. But it's some of the most authentic high school football you'll ever see in a movie, because it's literally just a high school football game.
Just South Georgia private school high school football. Jason, what works about this movie for you? I'm curious about like your perspective versus me as a first time watcher of this movie who hasn't seen many of these movies.
I find it very authentic in a way. The accents that, like I said, like, This is a picture of a world. I'm not going to say it is a valid endorsement of a mindset, but I will say it is an accurate depiction of a world. Yes, this is exactly what that part of the world looks and sounds and smells and feels like, and this is how everyone talks. These are their preoccupations and their worries. I mean, the church jargon in this is like, it's so on point. There is a guy who walks around praying for students by touching their lockers, which is very charismatic. And he drops in the same sentence, "I just felt led," and "bloom where you're planted." And I'm like, wow, I know that guy. he hits them with a, I just want a generation that has a heart for you, Lord. And I'm like, this guy, that's the accurate, that's the right guy. So like, it's this weird thing where it's like, I don't know if this movie needed to exist, but it does. And I'm in a way glad that people who knew, you know, who were authentic to the world were the ones who depicted it, because it ended up being an honest depiction of like how it actually looks and sounds. You know, an honest depiction in terms of like, if you reach 500 as a coach on the hot seat, are you gifted an F-150? That part's not real.
Especially not in Georgia.
Yes. I mean, it's, but like what it says about this character and what it says about the filmmakers, that like their idea of like, coach, this community believes in you, is giving him an F-150. Like, he makes $24,000 a year. So he's getting a truck that's worth more than his entire salary for winning three games, for going from the hottest hot seat to 3-3, he gets a new F-150. And it's like, this is Georgia Valhalla. This is Georgia man's like ultimate ascent. That this is the highest level you can go as a Georgia man. So like, just everything about it is it, this and the movie ATL, the big boy movie ATL, oh, from man. Honestly around the same time. You put those two together and you have the state of Georgia.
I mean, I thought the most realistic part of the movie was that the board or parents or whoever were convening to fire him. Like, that makes sense. This, I can't believe he lasted 6 years in Georgia football. This would be unheard. I mean, the man in this movie, Mark Richt, was rolling off 10 win seasons like nothing, and they cut his ass. They sent his ass to Miami. Like, he is such a low energy, the most unmotivational coach in high school football. Like, I'm shocked that he lasted 6 years. Like, it's very realistic that they were plotting to replace him. It's unrealistic that they waited 6 years to do so. Like, mediocrity and football in the South don't usually fly.
Small town high school, though. I mean, I realize it's an academy. It's a little different. But, like, I think the coach that was at my high school, and we never, ever came close to having a winning season. He was there, like, 12 years. When you know everybody, you know, and, like, you're – it's – I think it's different.
Did he have more personality than our coach here? Was that what
– Maybe. I mean, I didn't take his history class, but I assume.
Because that's the thing. He's not like, I wouldn't say he's unlikable, but he is low energy, Debbie Downer. I don't know why this thought popped in my head, but like, if Trump would have a field day with this guy, if he was running against him, like he'd be low T Grant or something like that. Like he just tear him apart.
Grumpy Grant. Like, yeah.
Yeah, he's brutal. Truly not the guy you want to lead your program. But Alex, what worked about this movie for you?
That's, you know, the third day songs. I was watching, I'm telling you. Like, it's so weird. It's weird for me because, like, when I walked away from that, I walked away from all of it. But the main thing my whole time in that world was music. Like, I clung to it. And I listened to as much as I possibly could all the time. So to hear something very mainstream, like Third Day, just really kind of took me back to like 2006. We're all wearing polo shirts. I'm going to Bible study. My best friend is, what was that book called, Jason? That was like, you shouldn't even like, you shouldn't kiss the person you're with until you get married.
Dating goodbye.
Yes. And like, she was preaching to all of us, like, that's how you know you're in love is when you, like, can,
when you are married.
When you are married. And I mean, that was just the world I was in. And then you hear like Third Day, and that's as common, you know, in the secular world, it'd be like turning it on and hearing, you know, look at me trying to think of a modern, like Jack Harlow or like whomever. But I haven't listened to that stuff seriously in 20 years. So, but it's like, I don't know. It's everything. I echo everything Jason said, because it works for that community, what it needs. Like, it does what it needs to do. I think the death crawl scene, like, if you made that, if you put that in an actual, like, secular sports movie and you made it better and different actor and everything, I think that really works. It's weird in a movie like this because, you know, they talk the whole time about, oh, you know, once we start focusing on God and once we, but you notice how, like, there's never really anything from that. They're not out doing, like, volunteer work. They're not out, like, you know, preaching his word to various people. It's just they decided one day, we're doing this for God. Now we're winning.
Win these games for God, brother.
You know, and like, I get the players, like, it's happening in the classroom too. Look at them doing math. But you never really see that play out. Like, to me, that was very, like, true to what I remember is, like, you were never given a plan for what does that mean to live for God? And, like, your accomplishments weren't your own. It was, if you want to get better at this thing, you got to give it to God. What does that mean? Just give it to God. Just give it to him. Just lay it down.
lay it at the foot of the cross.
Lay it at the foot of the cross.
Yeah.
I don't know what that means. Give me a to-do list.
I literally do not know what have faith means. All I know is it makes me better at football.
That was a terrible answer because you asked me what worked and I went into what didn't.
I mean, you said
third day.
Third day worked. I loved third
day. Here's how Georgia this is. Third day is from my Metro Atlanta high school.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they definitely called in a favor with that. I was like, you couldn't have gotten these songs.
Speaking of calling in a favor, something that works is Mark Rick showing up. That was a delight. And again, I'll kind of kick it to you guys as the experts in this space. How often do college football coaches or people like that show? Because the connection between the evangelical community and college football in a lot of places, specifically Clemson, is very like direct. Like, you could, if this was made now, you could 100% see Dabo in the stands or other people. Like, is this a one-off, or does this community get big time cameos like this, especially, you know, are there any other college football related cameos in this world?
I think, considering this is allegedly the Georgia State title game, that it feels plausible that Rick would be there, which, like, yes, this team that was 0-3 ends up in the state title game because God is real. I don't, there's some math in the middle there, but I mean, it feels plausible that Rick might be there if there was like any recruiting implications that would feel more likely, but we don't really have any sense that any of our players are any good other than like 54 is kind of big. But yeah, it definitely feels like it is Mark Richt has heard about what a man of God Coach Grant is, and that's why he's there, which like is a thing in all these movies. And God's Not Dead, God's Not Dead ends with like the Newsboys, another Christian band that I'm sure Alex remembers. They show up to this college and they're like, "We have heard about the young man of God who is standing against the atheists." So like there is a thing where the Christian celebrities will swoop in to have your back in your, you know, when you're facing the Goliath. It's a trope. Yeah. So Mark Richt is the is like the Jesus on a white horse of revelation swooping in when you need him most.
Just the shots of him killed me. Like the one where he's just like
He's also
with the
he's the
fist bump.
tannest person in the crowd too. That tan is coming through.
It's
That
true.
Miami tan. He mentions that Grant, I guess, played for him. Isn't that the thing? Like always come to see a former player or something like that.
I didn't know if that meant he played for him or if he just played for Georgia.
Yeah.
Like a former Georgia player.
Either way, what they taught Grant at Georgia or playing for Mark Richt did not stick. Let's get into the strikeout and what didn't work so we can get all of Alex's takes before she has to depart the pod early. But what is for the show, what Jason, what is the worst part about this movie?
I guess I mean, for me, it's going to be just the massive yawning logical incongruency staring you right in the face the entire time that Alex mentioned, which is basically like if you church hard enough, good at football now, because I don't know, you know, like there, like I've seen all these verses in the Bible about like you should be nice to poor people and stuff. Well, what if, why does not doing that make us good at football? Like there's just so much logic that is just not there. And like when you're in the world, you have this like tiny sense that like that's not adding up, but it makes me feel great, right? W once you step outside of it, you're like, how did I ever think anything but how insane and off this is? So like watching it now, many years after having left that world, what didn't work for me is basically everything but the shots of high school football players tripping over each other's shoes, because it was like, okay, that's real. The accents are real. How much this man loves his F-150, that's real. That all makes sense. The things that they are saying, I get why they think them, and I get that they believe them, and I get that they mean them more than anything in the world, and there is nothing about it lines up with, and not even the rules of the religion that they're professing. So it's a pretty big problem with the movie, I
Yeah, seems pretty. Something we discussed last week in the Miracle episode is that a problem that sports movies have is when the underdog team is convincing us why they should beat the giving actual sports reasons of why they should beat the big bad team. It often is like they just win because they're underdogs versus like a movie like Miracle, not to dive too deep, but like tells us that they win because they train really hard and Kurt Russell's character develops like, you know, a system playing as a team and yada yada yada. We have a reason why the US beat the Soviets. With this, again, all we have is that reason of they're believing in God, they're putting it in God's hands, and God is helping them win these football games. As opposed to, you could have just been like, hey, we're gonna take the same passion we have for the Lord and put it into football, and like Coach Grant's gonna make up some new plays, or we're like gonna get better in some way. But it's just like, no, God's taken it. So now we're a great football team, and that's the biggest fallacy in this movie and this world. Apparently, it's tough.
I think one thing that I found really funny is, you know, when they lose the playoff game and he gets in the truck and he's like, I just really hope God was gonna do this for us, gonna give us. And it's like, yes, because God likes your team more. But you notice they make it a point when they find out the other team forfeited because they had ineligible players. They make it a point to say, because we don't cheat, because we're not like cheaters. You know, like they really gotta paint the picture of God would prefer us because we're not cheaters.
Because tell you what, brother, football has never rewarded a cheater. Not
Not
once.
in Georgia.
Not
Not in
once.
Georgia. No.
I also think, and obviously this is just from a mother's perspective, and just kind of, again, like what you're sort of taught in that world, the fact that the movie opens and we obviously see this coach is down on his luck. Everything's broken. His car is broken. His house smells, which is just a weird, just a weird thing to walk in and be like, why does the house stink? Things are breaking down and they're talking about a baby. Like, in logical worlds, you would not be planning to bring a life into the world where you can't even take care of yourselves. But they very quickly make the point that this is why they're married. This is what this is for. And for that to somehow be compromised or threatened is going to be a big deal. And it's like, y'all need to fix something. Someone needs to get a different job because you're not going to be able to afford it.
You first need an F-150. Yeah, but like, yeah, it is a huge storyline in this movie that this woman is trying to get pregnant, and it's not working for this couple, and they're just going to keep trying and trying and trying. It's the B plot of the movie is their attempt to get pregnant.
And he's shooting, like, blanks too. Isn't that what they imply? Like, she's fine. It's his fault.
They got to go to the doctor a few times, and it's there are two, both of the main plots are, I see exactly what they're doing. They're playing on biblical stuff. The first one is obvious, David and Goliath, right? And it comes down to David wins, not because he's big, but because he's tricky, right? So they do a trick play to score a touchdown at the end or whatever. And the Goliath team loses because of coach's terrible clock management, AKA arrogance. Goliath was arrogant in the story. The B plot of this, of the coach's wife trying to, I'm sorry, I'm blanking on her name. Shouldn't call her that, but Brooke, wasn't her name Brooke? That's her name. Mm-hmm. She's trying to get pregnant the entire movie. That is like extremely biblical. There are so many stories throughout Genesis and all the way through the Gospel of Luke where a woman is trying to get pregnant, or unrealistic, unlikely that she'll become pregnant if God doesn't personally intervene. So, like, yeah, is this the story of a football coach whose wife is immaculately conceived? I don't know, quite possibly, but yeah, everything in this movie is attempting to remind you of stuff in the Bible, including this woman having no other purpose than bearing a child. Like, it's like, men win football games, women get pregnant. Like, that is what this movie is telling you, and that is an accurate depiction of how everyone in this world would think.
So where I was surprised, so they mentioned that they've been trying for 4 years, and she brings up maybe seeing a specialist, and it's like, it took you 4 years to think about that. I was actually surprised that they saw a specialist, and that the argument against doing like in vitro fertilization or whatever was the cost, and not that it's like the devil magic or something like that. Like, I was actually surprised that, one, they went to the specialist and were at least interested in treating or trying to do something to create a child. Like,
with science.
Yeah. I was very surprised that they looked at in vitro fertilization. Is that, am I saying, what is that? Is it
in vitro fertilization?
Yeah. Look at me. I know my stuff, but yeah, I was actually kind of surprised. But when she's like, we've been trying for 4 years, she's, should we see a specialist? I was like, probably 3.5 years ago. Yeah. You probably should have.
I think, and this is just my opinion, from my perspective now, that does seem odd. But again, when you're part of a community that tells you it is up to him, your steps have already been decided, everything you do has already been laid out, just because you don't know about it. Like, I could see if you're immersed in that, you're doing it and you're thinking, well, it's either going to take us a long time, or you're already deciding, like, you're accepting in your head, well, maybe I'm just not meant for this. Maybe I'm just not meant to have a baby, because if God wanted me to, he would give me a baby, no matter how long it takes. And so, but I had the same reaction rewatching it. I was like, that's not realistic. Kinda. I mean, when you think like when you think everything is up to God anyway, it is really easy, if you're on the wrong side of that, to get very defeated and think, well, it doesn't matter what I do because it's already decided.
Especially because the flip side of it is not just they want to have a kid. It's this entire world is based around, like, your worth as a person is getting married ASAP and having kids ASAP and teaching them to become people who will have Christian kids ASAP, right?
Yeah.
Like, so much of this is this self-perpetuating system that, like, and I mean, you're getting glimpses of this in a football movie. Like, that's how pervasive it is. They can't help having a half hour of this movie is about patriarchy and paternalism and complementarianism,
yeah.
A football movie.
So there's another thing in that caught my eye of when they're again talking about just how generally broke they are. And she says something about like him making $24,000 a year. He's like, we make $30,000 a year because you make six. And I was like, huh? She's not like, she's doesn't have kids. Like, she's not a stay at home. Like that, I did the math. That works out to making $2.80 an hour if you're working full time. I'm just curious. Like, you guys are struggling. Like, you got to find a better job than making $6,000 a year. What's going? I just had questions of what's going on there.
I'm willing to bet though she has a lot of time to volunteer at the church. And when you think
that church is using up all her time.
Yep. I'm serious.
If you
are using that time to help with anything, like children's church or nursery or like whatever, then it's time well spent, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's stuff that like a man at the church probably get paid for, might even have a nice title. A woman is just, the women are expected volunteer. To just carry churches. Yes.
Yep.
The other thing is, what is her job? She's a florist. Of course.
Of course she's a florist.
Because girls like that stuff, right?
Girls love that's flowers.
What a lady would be doing. It's also, it ties in, like, it there would be pressure on him to not have a wife who brings in a large share of the household finances. There'd be pressure on him to bring in almost all of the money, right? So, like, if there's probably a moment where she's like, I could go work at a freaking restaurant. I could be bringing in more money. And he's like, no, I'm a man of God. I'd rather be poor than have a wife who makes money. So,
yeah,
man,
that's exactly how it goes.
There's a lot going on.
There is. Alex, what else didn't work about this movie?
Didn't work? So much.
A lot. I have a lot written down. I know we're not going to get to all of it, but just like every scene, and I was like, look at that.
I'm sure I know y'all are going to get into the actual gameplay because I think we all know, like, I don't care who you are. No coach in his right mind is going to go for it when you're at the state championship, I mean, when you could just get a field goal.
The end of the state championship y'all can handle game that. Was just out of control bad. Just there's got to be a different way to set them up for a 51-yard field goal.
The one thing, and I went to Briarcrest in Memphis. Shout out Hugh
Freeze. I was about to say, anyone notable from that school?
But I went when I was like elementary going into middle school. I did not go. I went to a public high school in Arkansas. For me, because I watched this years ago and I forgot most of it. And so when I was rewatching, I wasn't paying full attention. I couldn't remember if it was a Christian, like a private school or a public school. What didn't work is I feel, and maybe I'm wrong about this, but at least at Briarcrest, everything that you did, God was part of it. Your academics, your free time, your lunch, whatever. You didn't really get the sense of that. And then they're like, surprised, like, we're going to have a revival. We have kids talking about the Bible. And it's like, you're a Christian academy. You should be talking about this all the time. Because, at first, you don't ever hear mention of it. And it's kind of funny that it just occurred to the coach of the football team at this Christian academy. What if we focus on God? Like, what if we just throw out the rule book? Check out this God guy. I don't know. It was odd for me, but I didn't go to a private school, so I don't know.
No, you're right. Like, I went to a Christian private school for parts of, like, my elementary years. And, like, yeah, we had Bible class at school, like, every day.
And chapel.
And it was like, yeah. It was...
Well, they mentioned that there's a guy who teaches Bible class because when they're having their revival out on the football field, they say something about so-and-so's Bible class. Like he's out there teaching. He's the teacher who, like... weirdly goes into the stands to comfort the three crying teenage girls, which I was like, that feels
completely accurate. That feels when that happened, I was like, yes. I've seen that guy.
Yep.
I have seen that individual lurking around in youth groups. Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. I guess the vibe I got from, and Alex, you're absolutely right. It was like, shouldn't this place already be pretty religious? But like, what they're going for there is, This is a dead and dry community. They have hard hearts. They're just, you know, they have the name on the side of the building, but they're, you know, it's all for show. Like they're trying to show that this man of God is going to be the one who's going to lead this school back to what it should be or whatever. But like, I almost wish they had leaned more into that. We're a Christian school, but none of the kids are reading their Bibles. You know,
it's a crisis.
Yeah, the solution is football.
I mean, Use football to bring them back to the Lord.
So I do have to, this is kind of unrelated, but related. I can't help thinking of, and I think I've tweeted about this before, my youth pastor, when I was getting ready to go to college, like all my friends were going to these private Baptist colleges, like Union or Williams Baptist, which is a little ways from Jonesboro. And I was not, like, I was getting ready to go to Ole Miss, and this is just not acceptable for the pastor. So yeah, to my favorite Christian school. And my youth pastor called me into his office, and he was from Alabama. That's important in a second. And he was just, I'm just really worried about where you're going to school. And I'm like, well, I'm going to be a writer. And I'm telling him all this stuff, whatever. And he's like, do you know they say cuss words in their fight song? I didn't. That's, I knew nothing about it. And I'm like, oh, no, I didn't know. He's like, well, if you're not going to go to a Baptist college, you could at least go to Auburn. And he was dead serious. This man was not joking. He would have been really fine. But I was like, okay, I'll go to Auburn. Anyway, sorry. That just, I can't stop thinking
about
that.
Perfect.
Incredible. It truly, truly incredible. There's a couple, like, so... Jason, like you mentioned, it's very much like this kind of insular community, and it's about the community. And like at a Christian school, at a private Christian school, you can do all these, you know, you can obviously like make the athletics about God and things like that. But there's when they're showing the head as they're going on the montage and like showing the headlines and stuff, the Albany Times, which is the local newspaper. It seemingly like this is not a private Christian newspaper, although it could just be the same thing. It says the headline is Eagles land in the playoffs. Taylor leads team in prayer, giving God thanks for victory as the subheader. Alex is a journalist. Mm. As,
whatever you say, man. Are you asking if it's realistic? It is a small town Southern paper. It is.
I mean, it's so sure. It's so interesting to me. I mean, we have, I mean, shout out to the Bernie Star. Like, we have that, but it's the, I don't know, religion never transcended the pages. I mean, again, they cover public high schools, but.
I mean, I went to a public high school. We prayed before a football game. The marching band prayed before we performed. We prayed at the end of the game. We did See You at the Pole. Is that what it's called?
See you at the pole.
Okay. I recognize no separation in that. So I'm sure in our little town paper, I promise it was there without any sort of like, this is weird. We shouldn't be talking about it. An unusual move. They prayed. No, I mean, we did it all the time. So I would expect the
pregame prayer. Yeah. If you play athletics in the South, like it's,
but the pre marching band performance prayer. And I had to lead it because I was the drum major. So that was my big job.
They let a lady lead a prayer.
Crazy, right? We were progressive in Arkansas.
Yeah, clearly. Woke Arkansas.
Jason, what else didn't work? I mean, if we're
let's just make a list.
Roundhouse. Just make, I mean, I haven't, like, their quarterback clearly just finished his first day at throwing school. Like, yes. Just tough. Tough. They're state champion quarterback.
Yeah, at no point did I get the sense this team is any good, but there is this thread where it's a sports movie trope. In this one, it emerges. Hoosiers, I think, is the definitive example of like this team of white guys. They claw and they scratch and they just work so darn hard and they're so humble and they got I guess in other sports movies they got clean haircuts. No, in this one they have authentic Georgia floppy haircuts. But otherwise, they're just such clean cut white boys, and they go to the state title game where the other team is diverse. And it's, yes. It's called out, they're bigger than us, they're stronger than us, but we're smarter than them. And it's like, okay, this movie was like harmless until the title game. And then it's like, well, damn, now you're that kind of sports movie all of a sudden, yeah. You know,
that stood out like a sore thumb, because I believe the Shiloh team are heroes. I think they have the black assistant coach, and I think they have one player of color. And the state championship team, the Giants, are a majority black team, and they have a black player who commits a dirty foul, lays out their kicker, and it was it is glaring when you watch it. And Jason, like you mentioned, Hoosiers does the exact same shit. So this isn't reserved just for evangelical movies, but that was one of the bigger missteps in the movie, seeing it. It was glaring, and it was deeply uncomfortable.
Yeah, and it's so frustrating, because it would not have been hard to have the Shiloh Christian School to have that be a diverse team. It's South Georgia, you know.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
And you could have had the teams be both reflect the demographics of Georgia at large, and then it's not a problem at all. But like,
and all these kids seem to be volunteering from the same pool, and on their team only like three kids in roles. So it's just you're choosing for all the extras to be white players on their team.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's
but again, it's following the church too, because it's church members, and I don't know the stats or the demographics from, what is it, Sherwood Baptist? But
I'm guessing it's I'm guessing that is a town with a lot of small AME churches and one large white church, because that is a pretty common dynamic.
Yeah.
Well, Alex, I know you have to depart the pod. Do you have anything else that doesn't work? Any final words on this movie before we go to ad break?
I don't think so. The one thing I will say, though, rewatching it all these years later, because when you walk away from something that just kind of consumed your life and you get farther and farther away, you really comfort yourself with, like, that was the best decision I could have made, right? Watching this movie reminded me that, like, being part of that world gave me so much comfort. And like when I saw the girls crying in the stands, like I almost started weeping, because I remember that feeling of this is what I'm living for. And it's so simple, and it's one thing, and everything I do in my life is going to follow this one thing. And that's very scary. It's a scary thing to say out loud, but it's also, you know, it kind of reminded me of parts of me that are more compassionate, I think, and to remember that like people don't just choose to follow something that makes them not think critically. Like it's a system that, depending on how you're brought into it and how you stay into it, you can be a very smart, critical thinker and still find a lot of comfort in that, which is the dangerous part of it. And I don't know, it was that, and I've been reading, I'm not saying this just to suck up, but I'm about halfway through Jason's book, and there are times I just have to put it down, because I'm like, I remember this. I know this exactly. Even though it's from the perspective of a guy, like there are a lot of female characters in there that you're like, I was that girl. I was friends with that girl. I know that girl. And it's a lot to process, I think. And even though this is like a lighthearted, like that movie's just hilarious on its own, objectively, it reminds you of just how all consuming that life is. And you think it's just so simple, and it's like, oh my God, I'm happy every day. And you don't really take the time to break down what you're rejecting and you're in the world to make yourself happy. You know, you've just been told you're above it all now. And if you just follow this one thing, it doesn't matter what those people say, it doesn't matter what those people think, because you're living for him and that's it. It's intense. That's all I got.
Well,
that's good. And there's just so many, your brain is so designed to steer you away from those moments of self-reflection.
Yeah.
Well, Alex, I'm glad you could join us. It was great to see you. If I could give you a free F-150 for this, for coming on the show, I absolutely would. Absolutely would. Let's take a quick ad break, and then Jason and I will get back and roll through the rest of the categories.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Okay, we're back. best scene in this one, I found like I was having a challenging time picking out, because with movies that are like, what's not good is I guess is the word. It's like hard to pick out like what would be the best scene. Like there have been episodes where we've done like what's the worst scene or whatever. I found the championship game of a very rich text. There was a lot to go off. It was one of the longer extended pieces. But before we dive into just the mechanics of the championship game, are there any scenes that stick out to you in this one as legitimately good or very reflective of your upbringing or anything that you know, that really stands out to you?
I really enjoyed the F-150 scene. I keep going back to it. It was just, I watched this with my daughter, who she is very fortunate to not have been raised in this part of the world, but she loved this movie. She thought it was hilarious. Like for her, this was like a glimpse into a whole other world, and she thought the whole thing was very fun. And you know, she likes football. She plays flag football. So like for her, getting to see like the inner workings of a boys' team, she liked that. The F-150, it felt like the whole movie was building to the F-150, just the Georgianness, like the Georgia meter was ratcheting up, and it was like, he's going to get a new vehicle. What's he going to get? Oh my gosh. Yes. Yes. We're going all the way.
Has to be an F-150.
What does it say?
Let's see. It says, Grant Taylor, the impact you made on our school means more to us than you ever know. The Lord has used you to meet a need in our lives, and now we want to meet a need in yours. You'll find the title of this new truck in your name. Please accept it as our way of saying thank you. Somebody done gave you a truck? Man, this title got your name on it. Got to be kidding me. Grant Taylor, somebody done gave you a new truck.
This is my truck.
The death crawl is effective. Like there are details, like Alex mentioned, it's kind of weird that everyone's just standing around watching, not hooting and hollering or whatever, but it is an effective scene. A lot of heart went into that scene, and you can tell, and you can see why it was the thing that went pretty viral from this movie. Other than that, everything was like that detail hit because I know that guy, you know, all that stuff was like pretty personal for me, but like the effective filmmaking, I guess the practice scene, the crawl, is probably the one.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, when he's like talking about God delivered the F-150 or God delivered for him is just incredible. And it's just great that they have him the whole movie driving just the biggest shit box they could find. Just the car that dies all the time. And she says the thing about when he gets back to his house for the first time, which is it was in the trivia. It was like, it was someone's hunting lodge that they were renting, but he lives on a beautiful piece of property in a very nice looking house. But it's certainly not a cheap place. But like he gets in, he parks, and she's like, why did you park out there? Died again. Like car died, but I had time to park. It's just, for me, it was the championship game. Because of everything going on, Mark Richt is in the stands. We have an opponent for the first time, because everyone else is kind of a faceless opponent. We don't know anything about them. We don't know anything about their coaches. We have former professional wrestler with his lollipop just being generally very arrogant. This is also the game where, like you said, they had to shape a lot of their filming like around football. They had to shape their story around football they already filmed. But for this one, it was clear they filmed football specifically for the movie, like had the cast out there and doing things. And this is where I had the strongest feelings of, they don't really understand how football works in a lot of ways. And like, I mean, you get, it's fourth and goal, presumably 8 to 10 seconds left. He's like, we got to go for, you know, we got to shut, you know, score this touchdown or whatever, instead of just like kneel. It's like the second worst piece of clock management in movie history. But I don't know if you've seen All the Right Moves, the Tom Cruise football movie from 1981. Some similar clock management there, but I would ask you. I presume it's probably not surprising that they didn't put a lot of effort into making the football correct or close to correct.
I think it reflects this sort of sense that, like, we are men from Georgia. We know football, right? Like, we don't need to hire a football consultant. We are straight Christian men from the state of Georgia. We automatically know this stuff. And it's like, no, you didn't. I get that you've watched a lot of college football, but it's not coming across that you actually put any thought into how it works. So, like, yeah, the clock management thing, it just typifies the hubris in trying to tell a football story without understanding football all that well. Like, I get what they're going for. They wanted to convey the other coach has arrogance and our good guy coach is humble and just does what it takes to win. But this is the dumbest way. No one has ever been arrogant enough to pass up. He could have kicked the field goal. His whole thing, they were setting up like he thinks it's shameful to score field goals instead of touchdowns. But, like, literally the state title is on the line. You don't have to do anything. Kicking a field goal will run the score up. But instead he chooses to go for a touchdown, fumbles it, and they run it back in. No.
just not a thing that happens. And that leads us to the play that we knew was coming the whole time, this undersized kid. We haven't talked about David at all. This undersized kicker who, the second we meet him, the second we find out that he's coming out as a kicker on the team, we know for a fact that this kid is going to kick our game-winning field goal. But it goes into the God's going to help you make this kick of it all. And that's, I thought that's when it really hit a second level of, yes, there was, you know, hey, we're doing this for God and stuff, and that's why we're playing good football. But this was the first time that they explicitly said, like, hey, you've got to give it all, but God's going to help you make this kick, which is, I'm sure there's a segment of people who watch this movie who are just watching this like, fuck yeah, but not saying fuck, but like something else, just like super jazzed about this, that God shifted the wind for this kid to make this 51-yard field goal.
Which is, that's the canon of the story. Like it is, he's kicking into the wind, or is he, right? But yeah, I'm trying to remember being around the age of these players and all that. I don't remember ever having a sense that, like, God cares who wins our sports games. And I was deep immersed in the world. Like, you know, I thought God cared about everything, but I don't remember ever having the sense that, like, I mean, this might be, I'm an Atlanta sports fan, so of course God does not care who wins any of our
God
games.
Could not care less about any, yeah, of your teams. He might send you Bill Belichick, though.
Yeah, sure. That sounds fun, I guess. But yeah, like, I know there are people who they do this logic trick where it's like, if we win, then we will draw attention and then we can pass that attention on to God. Therefore, we should be the ones who win, because if the other team wins, they won't share their attention with God. So it's like this inventing a reason why me winning is better for the universe thing. And then if I win, then that proves it. And if I don't win, then I didn't have enough faith or whatever. And so that's why the wind shifted.
That seems like the evangelical version of Michael Jordan inventing enemies and gripes against people to motivate himself in that way. It seems like it's just kind of a different version of that.
Yeah. And I mean, you see a direct version of that in most of these other movies. Like I mentioned, God's Not Dead, where it's like everyone's out to get us and all that. There's not a lot of that here, just because there's everyone in the movie, it, you know, believes the same thing. But yeah, there is a lot of saying whatever you need to say in order to believe the thing you're supposed to believe, and feeling like you have to do both of those things. And you're not allowed to just like kick a football and see it go through and feel good about the work that you put in, because like that's prideful, right? That means, oh, you're proud of the work you did. You're not proud of the Holy Spirit working through your foot. You know, like everything has to be, everything has to be about the mission, the group, not really the group, but like the church, the institution. Everything has to be about how good it is. and how a piece of garbage like you was somehow able to succeed thanks to this institution, even well, a field goal.
That goes into something like that I was kind of thinking about with this movie and how their mindset and like how they view sports too, because sports is such a, all sports really are built highly on failure. And there's a line, like if we were getting into best quote, there's a line, I was hoping God would give us just one win in the playoffs or something like that. Like it's, I guess it's kind of like the free will question too. And I wasn't in this world, so I don't know how that works. But if you're evaluating sports, for them, is it all, we did this, we won or lost, or this field goal went in or hit the post, or, you know, their guy fumbled the ball because God was in our favor? Is there a line there?
Yeah. There is certainly a note of that. And it's kind of an ancient and universal thing. Like, you know, in other cultures, they call it luck, right? And it's, you don't use that word here because like everything is God's will. Like luck is ordained. Like luck is essentially, that's a word for, well, something happened and I don't understand it, therefore God must have wanted it to happen. And like some of that is biblical. Like there's stories of like two armies are fighting and like the tides of battle are shifting based on God's favor, based on like who is saying and doing the right things in those moments or whatever. And like they take those stories of wars from 3,000 years ago and they place them on a football field as if football matters. It's ultimately it's a way to say luck without attributing anything in the universe to randomness, I guess.
That's kind of like the scene from really masterful work of cinema, Troy.
At times it is.
Yeah, it has its moments where they're wiped off the beach and it's like, and only the Trojan horse is left. And he's like, the gods have punished them for, and it's like, okay, just burn the horse. Best quote in this movie, there is a legitimately funny scene that I enjoy in this movie. Not like I'm not laughing at it. I am legitimately laughing with them. And it is when he gets the call from the guy who's letting them know that the playoff game is going to be canceled. And they could do like that's Charles Schulz. Oh no, that's Charles Lindbergh. Lindbergh.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Hindenburg, Gatlinburg. That's a legit. They take it like one to two references too long, but that's a legitimately good joke. Very much enjoyed that.
Yeah. And I liked the moments where the two coordinators, those two guys, they have a repartee, you know, like they banter and like, I mean, it's the one black character, the one person of color, like with actual lines in the entire movie, and he gets to just banter about like knowing stuff, you know, and then they're not having him like reference things that would feel stereotypically. He's just bantering about like, you know, he's just telling jokes about essentially playing like a Wikipedia game. That was a good scene. I think my favorite lines are the ones where a son says to a dad, there's like a rebellious player on the team or whatever, he's like, Dad, I respect your authority. And his dad just lights up like, this is all he's ever wanted to hear. It's it's so accurate. Like
that. Is that the one in the bank where the guy's like, I'd give anything to hear my son say that?
Yes. These dads sit around all day long thinking like, why don't my sons respect me as much as I respected my dad? It's like this obsession. And it's so accurate that it came through in that. The other one, and like I realize these are like backhanded compliments to call them the best line. The other one is when coach is standing in front of the team and he's saying like, are you doing your best for Jesus? Are you doing your best on the practice field? Are you doing your best in the classroom? Are you doing your best when you're on the computer at home and you think no one knows? And they cut to a kid.
Were they referring to what I thought they were referring to?
Yes, they cut to a player who looks down in shame. It's like, dog, this is a football movie, and you're hitting me with porn shame.
that kid looked down and was like thinking about how much LimeWire how long he's been on LimeWire.
I hope nobody's printing off stuff from my computer at home right now. Yeah, like yeah, I hope my Covenant Eyes isn't flaring up and sending emails to my dad right now. Like, yeah. Can we just talk about football? Why are you hitting these kids with that in this moment?
another great line. Jason, we're both parents, and I assume that your wife, like my wife, let you know that you were having a child with, you've made the team, the daddy team.
Yeah, and that line is like the culmination of everything, right? Like it's near the end. It's like all the hearts are full. How's she gonna deliver this? He's winning the championship of life, right? And that's what she said. You made the daddy team.
I mean, truly incredible. Like one of the most amazing movie lines I've ever heard. Like I just, because they. You know that they were thinking about, okay, how are we going to do this pregnancy announcement that they're just going to love? And they came up with the daddy team. I don't know how many ideas came before that. I don't know what was worse, what they scratched out to do the daddy team, but incredible, incredible stuff.
The other thing about, I just thought of this. So the same guy was the producer, writer, director, star, and caster, which means he was responsible for selecting the woman who is clearly younger than him, who would spend the entire movie trying to be impregnated by him. He's a pastor, and that's his job, is saying, you look like the woman who should play, who I'm not married to. You look like the woman who should pretend she wants to be impregnated by me. It's just a very strange thing for a Southern Baptist pastor to be doing on the church time, I guess. Not like there's actual sex scenes in the movie. I'm just saying it's this feels like the kind of thing where at most churches they would say, hey, hang on. We need a husband and wife duo playing these characters, you know?
Very deliberate choice. By picking the younger blonde woman,
for
coach's wife.
Because like I mean, my car's broken and my house stinks, but I got a smoking hot wife, so I'm a man of God. Yeah,
man of God. God has blessed me with my blonde wife. most athletic moment we've kind of talked about. I think that's the death crawl. That is legitimately extremely.
It's either that or the throw by the other team in the state title game. Their quarterback has like an actual arm.
Yes.
Like throws
actually
a couple.
Looks like a football player.
Yeah.
That's the thing with filming actual football and like having a bunch of actual athletes in this movie, like none on their team apparently, but like in the other teams, like there's some good looking football. It looks better than a lot of movies, which, you know, tip of the cap. The Lenny Harris Pinch Hitter Award for Best Supporting Character. Here's where I struggled. I did not really know anyone's name. And the problem with these movies and a lot of these actors being volunteers is on Rotten Tomatoes and IMDb, they have no pictures. So it's like, I know characters like the guy coaching the Giants who we talked about, the former professional wrestler, he is awesome. The assistant coaches for the Shiloh, for the school, the bigger guy who they're trying to give him the team initially, in the montage when he is screaming like woo and it goes on for like five, he says like five or six unnecessary woos, is one of the funniest things I've ever seen. Like I loved it. Are there any supporting characters who, I guess pretty much everyone except I would say the coach is a supporting character. Yeah. Is there anyone who sticks out to you as a favorite for one reason or another?
I mean, the bad guy coach, you know, we've said it several times. He is awesome. I'd suit up for that guy. Seems like a real asshole. He seems like a lot of fun. The mama coach did a pretty good job with the material, you know. It's the players are all just completely indistinguishable. Like I never got any sense that they had differing personalities, or, you know, like in all the, you know, in every sports movie, it's like, you know, you need like the hot shot, and you need the veteran player, and you need the, you know, the mentor player, and you know, these two guys are very different, but they're going to become best friends. There's none of that stuff. It's just like, no. They're all players. And so they're. My daughter was very freaked out by the kicker's dad.
I thought he was kind of strange. He gave me weird. He seemed like a character from Twin Peaks in a weird way.
he had a face like an old baby. he looked like Uatu the Watcher.
he would not be my Lenny Harris Pinch Hitter Award.
Yeah. Sorry.
I mean, well, there's Mark Richt too.
It might be Mark Richt.
2006. What was the feeling?
good.
What was the vibe with Mark Rigg? Like, vibes were good, right?
Yeah, this vibes were good.
Right,
they,
when,
I think
when Stafford
they had,
came in.
They had won the SEC, I think, twice by that point. 07 was setting up for that. I think 07 was their, like, was that the year they were ranked number one going in? But yeah, the vibes were awesome at that point. This was an incredible get for this movie, Mark Rigg in this movie.
Yeah, because Stafford is there by that time, I think. I think Stafford was a freshman in the fall.
That
might have
been Stafford and Knowshon were there, I believe.
Because I'm lining it up, the classic Clayton Kershaw and Matthew Stafford went to high school together, but I think Clayton Kershaw was drafted in 2006. But it's probably the best time to be Mark Richt at Georgia that there was. I think it's probably all downhill from this point. This movie was kind of his peak.
With some, yeah, I mean, there were some upward moments. You know, there was 2012. There was which that one didn't quite get all the way, but
I guess like the Aaron Murray.
This was certainly a peak, that's for sure. And once you throw in appearing in a like pound for pound bonkers successful Christian movie. This probably was his favorite year as a football coach, I would have to guess.
I would think so. You mentioned if the Giants coach is the Lenny Harris pinch hitter award, he would also be the villain in the defend the villain category.
Oh, there we go.
Because there's not really a mention of, like, Satan is not a villain in this movie. I assume some of these movies where Satan is a little more prevalent, like Satan or the left,
mm-hmm.
but neither of them are featured. So I think this is kind of our guy.
Yeah.
I think the defense of him is like, my man just wants to win football games. Like, he's arrogant, but he's there to motivate his team. They're some of the best coaches we've ever seen have this arrogant mind, you know, kind of arrogant air about them. And that's how their teams feel. Like Jimmy Johnson kind of had a little bit of that in him.
Sure. Yeah. Going for the touchdown, the completely unnecessary touchdown at the end. If it had worked, he would have looked awesome. Because what a heel move that is. Like, this inspirational Christian schools in the title game. We're going to run the damn score up on them for no reason. Get off my field. I love it. Let's do it.
I mean, he had the wrong quarterback. If Jameis is back there, we're punching that one in, baby.
Yeah. Just get you a big Josh Allen back there and let's do it.
This next category is one that is certainly easier when Caroline is on the pod. The Peter Gallagher Award for the hottest person in this movie. This is not a very hot movie. And
oof.
Are these movies? I don't think these movies are made to be hot people movies.
You're supposed to get a lot of chaste hot. You're supposed to get a lot of like, well, that looks like a person I would allow my child to date at age 18 and marry at 19. Like, that is the level of attraction you're supposed to have for any actor in any of these movies. Or you're supposed to think like, that person looks like one half of a clean cut couple. Like
that. in that regard, they nailed it with mostly everybody. Again, it's not the hottest cast ever. Mark Rick fairly in terms of college football coaches,
looking great.
Good looking dude. Yeah, his tan was very noticeable in the crowd. He was the tannest person by multiple shades.
This was one of his fluffiest hair years as well. He was known for the Helen Hunt hair, and it was lustrous at this point. So Mark Richt is unquestionably the hottest person in this movie. I mean, that's a former college quarterback and everything.
Yeah. Do we think Kirby would have done this? Because imagine like
Kirby's never
Kirby
heard of
in,
Jesus,
in
first of all. what high schools he play at? No, Kirby doesn't care about any of this shit. I think Kirby is like either not a denominational or Methodist, neither, which would be surprised. But I think for Kirby, it is more just making appearances, keeping, you know, like keeping the Georgians happy, keeping the yokels happy, doing this church shit. That's my vibe. Don't quote me. I don't know him. I don't know anyone who goes to church with him. But like, that's the general vibe I get sort of him as a character, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, Kirby would have been at that game, but to recruit. It's a state title.
Right, sure.
Kirby's there to sign a left
to recruit
tackle.
The other team's quarterback. Yeah.
Yes. That's why Kirby's there. Drinking game. Make a drinking game. Drinking game for this movie.
Well, first of all, we're drinking grape juice because you see, the wine that Jesus made, it actually had very low alcohol content. That's what I was always taught.
Of course, Jesus was very, very light on the
alcohol. Everyone knows Jesus was a teetotaler when he was partying at a wedding. Man, a drinking game for this one. So it's got to be something religious, I would assume.
Yeah. I mean, you could drink every time they say the word God.
Okay, so you're tanked. You're having, all right.
You're hammered.
You're having an awesome drunk. Time.
every time Coach is like a negative Nancy, like a sad drink for him or something like that.
Every time he looks just completely defeated, you got to finish your drink for him because he can't, because he's a Baptist in Albany, Georgia. So, well, every time he looks like he could use one, it's on you to do it.
It's got
for him.
Stone Cold Steve Austin when he gets the F-150.
Yeah. That's the victory. That's the victory moment. Like all that stuff about joining the daddy team. Like, no, he already did that. He's got F-150.
F-150. That's F-150 is for the daddies. Okay. Best time, worst time. So this is which character over the course of this movie had the best time and which character over the course of this movie had the worst time.
I mean, best time. So like the best, the ultimately the best time would be Coach, who, wins two state championships. We learned at the very end. Right.
Yes.
But he's miserable for most of the movie.
Joins the daddy team. Yeah, if it was just a first half award, he is having the worst time.
Yeah.
His house smells, he's broke. He finds out that there's a secret group of board members trying to take his job and give it to his very unqualified assistant.
There's something wrong with his junk.
So he's shooting blanks. I mean, God might win, puts another championship in the rafters for him.
Yeah,
he might have the best time.
God has actually, God has a great time in this movie because there's no atheists or Satanists or there are no Kevin Sorbo playing a liberal professor. Like, there's no opposition to God in this movie. So God is just vibing this entire time.
Real Garden of Eden situation.
Really, that's how I've always thought of Albany, Georgia. That's paradise perfected. If we could all just get back to Albany, Georgia, everything would be fine.
The world would be better if everywhere was like Albany. Worst time is no one has a continually terrible time. I will say David, the field goal kicker, doesn't seem like he's having fun at any point in the movie. Even when he makes the field goal in the locker room after, when Coach calls on him, he looks downtrodden.
I don't know if he totally understands football. It's like he's a soccer player, which is sort of like, ooh, he's not a real boy. You know, like he's like this imported football player and they're teaching him how to be a man and stuff. So maybe it's meant to suggest he like still doesn't understand.
Did you notice when he set up for his kick, he turned around the other way, like how field goal kickers move back a few steps and side to one step? He turned all the way around to walk his steps.
Mm. Yeah, because they show
one
him
of those moments.
He's spraying the ball everywhere until the holder coaches him on the number of steps to take, and then he's like incredibly deliberate about those steps in a way that no one would actually be. Yeah, I don't know if really anyone has a bad time other than Mrs. Coach, I guess, because, I mean, she doesn't seem to really have anything going on in her life. She works like 8 minutes a week at the florist. Otherwise, she just tells her husband she's still not pregnant, and that's
it. She's not pregnant. She can't drink.
Yeah.
House smells.
She's not allowed to know anything about football.
I saw the dinner she made him, and it was deeply uninspiring.
Yeah.
We got to
get her out of Albany, man.
Dude, she deserves better. But after winning a state championship, they're in Albany forever.
Oh, they're Albany royalty now.
Yeah, they're gonna roll out the lifetime contract for him. I believe we have to skip the next category as we do not have Caroline in the show, but the Keith Morrison Dateline episode from this movie. It's really only Caroline. Caroline will just essentially on any movie riff on what Keith Morrison would say as far as the intro to the Dateline episode from this movie. She would have had a whopper for this one, folks. Caroline had a scheduling conflict, which is why she's not joining us. So we can just move right on to roster moves and which character would you swap out for Air Bud in this movie?
We need an athlete on this football team who I can actually identify. Like we need Air Bud at running back on the football team. Though that's the thing when this movie starts, there's some tragedy about like a running back named Tucker has transferred.
Oh, he transfers. We didn't talk about like, that. NIL ruining football.
It's just this devastating. Oh, now we're going to be awful. We already were. But from that point on, almost no player other than David, the kicker. Oh, his name's David. Did you get it? Is like identified or matters in any way other than like the 3 seconds when 54 is important because he's big. Like, so we need Air Bud to replace Tucker. And then we'll have one player who I'm like, ah, I remember that guy. I can tell him apart from anyone. I know a fact about him. I care about Air Bud's success. So just give Air Bud the rock, I think.
I think so. Although, hear me out, Air Bud is the dad of the kid who eventually gives Coach the F-150. And so we see Air Bud in the car, like, and the kid watching him have the F-150.
That's good. Or maybe Air Bud is the kid who's been looking at porn at home.
God damn it, Air Bud. stay off LimeWire. Okay, the big chill, which is like the chill, you know, the moment the good sports movies have, like in Miracle, Mike Ruzzioni's goal, things like that. I think if you're deeply bought into this movie, I would say the field goal is probably a big chill moment, but I think you have to be very deeply bought into this movie, or the death crawl scene.
Don't win! Come on, run! Two more! One more!
It's got to be 50. It's got to be 50. I don't have any more.
Look up, Brock. You're in the end zone.
I think for this, it's either when the camera zooms out and like, oh my gosh, 54 crawled all the way across the field. But the field goal is fine. I think the chill in this movie for its target audience is when they want the pregnancy revelation to hit so hard that they will the line to work. I would imagine that the target consumer of this movie is so invested in a successful pregnancy that they're like, gosh, that's the worst line I've ever heard. But I actually do feel chills anyway. So I think they can will it to work.
That I will take your word for it as far as what the chill moment would be. Because I don't have my finger on the pulse with this audience. So, I think if you're a little more bought into the football, it's the kick, but I don't. Do you think the people who watch this were that bought into the football? Because it's very obvious what's going to happen from the moment the movie starts.
I mean, it doesn't feel like the kind of thing that would have really worked on me, because it feels it just, you know, obviously clearly lower budget than the average sports movie. It's not the star of the show. The whole point of it is just like, look, the football's good enough, and now here's all the God stuff, you know? So like, I cannot imagine being, say, a 13-year-old in this world and watching this movie and thinking this football is awesome. No.
Yeah. That's good to hear. I'm glad the kids are all right in terms of that.
The kids can see through some things, and then they know when to smack themselves, you know, mentally for seeing through things.
Last category before Mortar Store, would you rather say a prequel, sequel, or remake of this one? I want to reframe this to you and I can't remember, like, I think I saw this on Twitter and I think you might have interacted with it, but I can't remember. It was someone. There was like a tweet of someone saying that there needs to be like a mainstream movie showcasing Christian values and things like that. And like, you know, more people need to be watching this and stuff like that. Is it possible for for there to be an evangelical sports movie or something like that to break into the mainstream to where more people than just this kind of very secular community are into it? Like, I go back, like, I remember the one thing that I consumed when I was VeggieTales. Everyone loved VeggieTales. And, you know, stuff like that. Like, is it possible to break through and have like an evangelical, because they continue to try with movies like that. Like Dennis Quaid had that baseball movie that came out at the beginning of this year and things like that. Like they continue to try. So it's getting closer and closer. Like, do you see that happening at some point?
A sports movie specifically? I think they could. I think there's some things they'd have to tone down, but I mean, like, how many athletes do we see? Like, I think Jesus, you know, immediately after CJ Stroud did it just Saturday or whatever. It's like the Heisman ceremony this year. It was every player at the Heisman ceremony had a speech about God, and then their parents talked about God. And it was like, Tim Tebow is the least religious person on the stage, I think, you know? So I think there is a massive, Deion Sanders, Dabo Swinney, Hugh Freeze, you know, just on and on and on. There is enormous level of comfort within football for evangelical coded expression, for charismatic leaning evangelicalism, I would say particularly. So like, I mean, if they were to do a movie like this and they get Deion to play the Mark Richt, bang, that's it. That's your crossover. Anybody will see Deion do anything. And like, there's some stuff I think they toned down, and then there's some stuff that they actually think through. Like we talked about, like, you know, the racial demographics of the rosters is just an instant turnoff for, you know, just gonna be a barrier for a lot of people with this movie. So you actually think through those things, and you think through those details. Like, it, you know, if you have a racially diverse team and Deion Sanders is playing a coach or an AD or something, and it's loaded with God talk, but it's not framed around any kind of political exclusion. It's all just like fuzzy, inspirational God talk. I mean, yeah, I don't think it would be like a massive hit, but I think it would make a lot of money.
I think if you make the football awesome, or whatever sport it is, if you make that actually, if you say, hey, you might not be a diehard Christian, diehard evangelical or whatever, if you're a diehard football fan or sports fan, you will love the football in this movie. You'll love the baseball in this movie. It gets everything right in terms of how the sport works and things like that. It just, like, you know, it could be a hyper religious team, but it's also, you've got a coach who's modeled after like youth pastor Mike McDaniel, and he's talking about the ins and outs of these new plays. He's this new, you know, we've got this new West Coast pastor coming to be our football coach. He's got all these fancy pre-snap motions and
yeah,
you know, talks about progressive Jesus.
It's always something like that where it's like, he's going to invent the option, you know, and the like football movie. But like, yeah, it wouldn't be difficult to say like, all right, we are going to spend the money to, we're going to have football scenes on par with like the Friday Night Lights movie or whatever. And then we're going to do all the Jesus-y stuff. Now, the movie I would actually be excited about is one that's not made within the by evangelicals for evangelicals market. Like, it is not a work of evangelical propaganda, but it is totally accurately about a Christian school, and, you know, it's warts and all complete honesty. Hollywood, I will write this for you. It's fine. I could dash out a script. Yeah, I could start writing and just hand it to you. But I would be very excited about that movie.
That's The Blind Side too, right?
Now there's a movie without any lingering issues or.
Ooh, buddy, that have not covered it yet on the show.
Really?
Have a lot of thoughts. Not yet.
Wow. Yeah.
Me, you, and Alex might have to reconvene for that one. Because,
oh man, yeah, Alex has the mic for all that one.
Yeah, foo, buddy. But Jason, this was great. I am grateful that you joined the show, that you came on, had a lot of fun. Tell the folks again about your book and where they can find it, where they can order it.
It's called Hell is a World Without You. It is available everywhere, as far as I know. There might be some book sites that don't have it, but it's available at bookshop. You can get it at your local bookshop. You can get it, if Amazon works for you, it's at Amazon. Payhip.com. We had physicals there, but we're down to ebooks, but those are pay what you want. And anything, you know, all money that makes its way to me by February 12th will be going to the Trevor Project. So the more the merrier. But paperback, ebook, hardcovers, they're all available everywhere. And go read the reviews and blurbs because I'm quite proud of them.
They heard nothing but good things. Excited to crack into it myself starting tomorrow. All those links will be in the show notes. And folks, if you enjoyed this episode of Big Screen Sports, please subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Rate and leave a review. You folks know the drill. If you are a baseball fan, check out my interview series from Phenom to the Farm that is presented by Baseball America. New episode dropping tomorrow with someone who I don't know yet. It'll be exciting. I just haven't recorded it yet, so we will see. But yeah, tune into that. And for Big Screen Sports, we'll catch you next week. Thanks for listening.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.